This is The After Party, live with Kim McAllister. Pick a couch, grab a drink, and settle into the conversation.
Good afternoon to you. Kim McAllister with you on The After Party Live. What a morning it's been, I'm telling you. First of all, we had the big announcement on the Nicki Maduro show. The show, just to kind of clear up any confusion about what's happening, is going to be on break for the rest of this week. So no show, no Nicki Maduro show tomorrow or Friday. And then we start fresh with recorded shows, and that happens on Monday. And the shows are going to really consist of one main topic and then maybe a more lighthearted topic. So two topics a day. And I'm thinking maybe we'll talk as long as we feel like we need to talk to get everything said. And that'll be maybe 10 to 15 minutes. So the show's shortened and recorded. And that is happening. Now, I think, and here's my thought on this. And of course, I am very grateful to be included on the Nicki Maduro show and happy that we're going to continue it. But I feel like Nicki is getting more work in San Francisco. And also, times are tough. She's looking for another job. I may have to do that as well. And so going to this recorded format may be easier for us to keep putting out content every day to have something for people to listen to if they choose. And so I think that's just going to be the way of the Nicki Maduro show. If she had to take all this work and I was filling in, which I'm happy to do, it wouldn't be the same because it's not Nicki and I talking, right? It would just be me. And here we have this show already. So I don't think you need more of me necessarily. So that's the way it will work out with the Nicki Maduro show. Mark Thompson's show, we had technical problems today, but that's back on track clearly because I'm using the system now. And so it's all right. It would have been, the system came back online maybe 20 minutes before the end of the show. And so getting everybody shifted back from place to place would have been difficult. So we just kind of let the show end and we'll be back tomorrow. Everything will be on track. And Tony is already developing a backup plan just in case anything like this ever happens again so that we won't get caught in such a state. But thank you for being here with me for the After Party Live, where we can kind of wrap up all the weirdness of the day. I really appreciate it. And I already have to have a huge thank you to everyone who's been contributing on the PayPal link. We had to switch over PayPal links as the show changed to a new account. And so a lot of people who thought that they were contributing were not. And if you have questions about that, you can always email me, kim@theafterparty.live. There's another email address, kgoinexile@gmail.com. You can also email me there and find out for sure. But again, the link to that PayPal account is in the show description. It's also in the About section on the YouTube show here on The After Party Live. Okay, enough said on that. So let's see. Mindy says, money makes the world go round. If y'all get a real 8 hour a day job, you won't have time for fun on YouTube. See, that's the thing. If we shorten it, right, and we record it, then we think we will have time to do it. So we take a couple hours on a Friday night or a Monday morning or whatever it is, and we think we'll still be able to do both things. That's the plan though, Mindy. We'll see how it works out, but I'm really hopeful because we both love it so much. So I hope so. Yes, Sandy Mark is going to visit his parents soon. They're having a rough time. And so he's going to do that. It'll be a little bit different. In the past, I have filled in for him, by myself with just, Albert and Tony. And that's been okay, but we're trying to grow the show, make it bigger. And it's so much easier if you have someone to talk to. So when Mark, takes a break coming up here in April for various reasons, you'll see other people filling in with me. So that'll be a little more interesting, perhaps. We'll see how it goes. I'm hopeful that it'll be good as well. I'm full of hope today. That's the way it's going to be. Will it be hard to include breaking news? It will, which is why this is a key piece of the pie. There may be days when we're both available. There may be days when I'm in the chat, right? And if something big needs to be discussed, that has just happened, we're able to hop on live on the Nikki Medora show and go for it. So if you click the notification bell, and you'll see it here on this show too, you can, it's right next to the subscribe button. So you can click subscribe and you click on that little bell. And anytime we go live, anytime there's new content, anytime a show is scheduled, it'll notify you. So that's important as well. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Tumbleweed. Yeah, hats off for persevering today and making it happen. It's the true American spirit of grit and determination. Well, we're not, Mark has been a TV guy in the past. I've done a little bit of TV, but mostly I'm a radio girl, right? I'm so much more comfortable being off screen than on screen. So that, it was kind of like easy for us to pull off. John Rothman and I and Mark, we're total radio people. So it was okay. Thank you for being in the chat. Love to read what you guys are having to say. Yeah, it has been a weird day, Lori. I will agree with that. All right. Oh, and Cheryl was listening on her phone anyway, so it was okay. Audio sound wasn't quite as good, and we didn't have the music and the drops and everything else, but it's all right. Susan says, good to see you. Hope the shows work out. Oh, thank you for the nice comments. I really appreciate it. And I will, I'll pop in from time to time in the chat, maybe more time than not, because I'll just be sitting in here working on after party stuff anyway, right? And looking for news and working on the Mark Thompson show. So we'll do that. Mark did not do a chunk of Trump. Can you do one? I don't want to steal Mark's thunder, and his chunk of Trump will probably be repurposed, reused, recycled, reduce, reuse, recycle, and he'll probably do it tomorrow. So I don't want to scoop in and steal his thunder. I wish too that there was a way for us to turn this into a full-time paying job. Absolutely. And it's different, you know, when you have to, and I really hate it. It almost feels like being on the radio and busking for a paycheck. It feels awkward and weird. And so I get that this is the new way of things. And if we're going to be on this platform and do this, and it feels like a lot of people want that to continue, that's the way it is, but it's really difficult. And it's not what it, you know, the paycheck that it was. And we all live in the Bay Area. We know what that means. It means, you know, we all have to make a real living. So maybe things won't stay as they are with the Nikki Medora show, but I'm going to try to keep this show up and running and an hour long live every day. All right. Will Mark be annoyed if I do his thing? I believe he would be. So we'll move right past it. All right. Let's talk about this story. The first one that I have for you today is this one, this stormtrooper guy. I'm sorry, I left your comment up on the screen, Cheryl. Okay. This guy, he decides, you know, he's a, as you can tell, huge Star Wars fan, right? And he feels like he wants to go to this convention. It's called a DD convention somewhere in Scotland. So he goes and he gets up as he gets dressed up as he's done multiple times in the past. And when he gets dressed up, he wears his stormtrooper outfit and he's got his Scottish kilt on to kind of Scottish it up a little bit. And he goes down to the train station in Aberdeen. And there he is. He gets on the train and there's a woman who's freaked out and says there's a man with a gun on the train. Can't see his weapon here, but I do think he had like a fake stormtrooper type of weapon. And so she calls the police. This man is known as the Grampian Stormtrooper, is what he calls himself on social media. He's got his Imperial Stormtrooper suit. He's got his kilt. And he gets aboard the ScotRail to Dundee at the Aberdeen train station, Aberdeen. And when this woman saw him and thought, this is scary, because, I mean, I guess when someone's wearing a mask like that anyway, you don't know who they are, whatever. It can be a little intimidating. So they turned the train back around. It went back to the station shortly after departing. The man is approached by a guard who takes him off the train to these two police officers who were waiting. He said he's met by two firearms officers because they have to have their weapons because they think there's someone with a gun on the train. At least that's how it was called in. So the two, they've got two firearms officers, three police Scotland, two British transport police, and they had to have a chat in the office, is what he said. The man learned that he'd been reported for carrying a firearm on the train, but he showed it to them. It's called a blaster, and it was a plastic prop. Now, some of this, these Star Wars outfits, the cosplay, as they call it, can look pretty realistic. So maybe it looked like a gun to this lady? I don't know. Police took the guy home so he can get a bag for his blaster to keep it in so that he wouldn't alarm other passengers. He was asked not to wear his full stormtrooper armor on the train because it was, again, scary for people. So he was headed to the DECON, D-E-E-C-O-N, at the Duncan Jordanstone College of Art and Design. He said it's the first time in 10 years of cosplaying that he's been approached by the police. It's interesting. The officers did take pictures with him. They do say, yeah, this is a false alarm. This guy's fine. But here he is even with the guys in the police squad car, right? And that's what the blaster looked like. So I could see why that would scare someone. Unless you really knew, oh, a stormtrooper. I guess, though, if you were a terrorist and you were trying to not show your face and you were trying to not attract, you didn't want to look like you had a gun in your, I don't know. I could see someone maybe dressing up like this to disguise their nefarious thoughts. Maybe? I don't know. I wouldn't have called the police on this guy, would you? He looks like he's just having fun. Maybe she thought Star Wars was real. It's a possibility. He has no gun. He did have it. It wasn't featured in the other picture. They want him to keep it in a bag. And they don't want him to wear all of his armor. You got to take it with you and maybe get dressed there, right? Stormtrooper in a dress. It's a kilt. It's a kilt. Yeah. He'd be right at home in Hollywood. I don't think, if I was in San Francisco, I wouldn't bat an eyelash at that. Even in Petaluma, we have a huge Star Wars museum in Petaluma. And so at every parade, there's always a battalion of stormtroopers marching by. This is kind of normal in my world. And I love the Scottish twist on the stormtrooper outfit. That's fantastic. Yeah, the plastic gun wouldn't fire. No. Pretty good, though. I love the story. So we also would love to talk to you about animals. And I have a really big, we being me, we have a really big animal section today. And I hope you'll bear with me on it. But there was just so much to talk about, so much to look at. And the first one that I wanted to tell you about is a video. This racehorse needs a ride, apparently. This horse wandered onto a train platform, an escaped racehorse, and there's video of this. So I wanted to present it to you so that you could see what they call a fair dodging horse. And here it is. See if I can make it big and show it. Yeah. There he is. Just coming on down the platform. Look at him go. People are getting out of the way. He's moving. He is moving. Yeah. So this poor racehorse was on the loose, on the lam. There he is. He was waiting on the platform at a train station. This happened in Sydney, Australia, and he was trotting, as you can see, up and down the platform before attempting to actually get aboard a train, at one point chasing a passenger. They have this all from security cam videos, pretty good security videos, I have to say. And kind of scary to see that train coming with that's kind of dangerous there. The horse was wandering onto the platform at the Warwick Farm station. It was a heavily stormy day. And the horse returned to pacing once the train that had been warned of its presence refused to open its doors. At one point, the animal chased after a fellow passenger on the platform who was able to get away from the horse without any injury. There he is. Look at him going right in. Police called to the station. The horse's owner soon arrived to take the animal home, and the horse was returned to his residence in stable condition. No one involved is taking any action. They say this guy was just horsing around. Ha ha ha. That's a sight though, right? If you're waiting for a train, there's a horse running all over the place. Beautiful animal. Let's talk about the deer rescue. These poor deer, they got pretty tangled up. Apparently this was a rope in a tree. This happened in England. Pardon me. Animal rescuers were called out because of these two deer that ended up with their antlers all tangled up in this rope that was attached to a tree. The Linjoy Wildlife Sanctuary and Rescue posting that their crews were called out when these two fallow bucks were found entangled in the woods right near the village of Milton. And by the time they arrived, they said, the deer had become entangled closer and closer together, with one of them having the rope wrapped tightly around its neck. So the more they struggled, the worse this whole situation became. The rescuers threw a deer net over both bucks. They were able to wrestle them to the ground before cutting through the rope with pocket knives. Both of the deer had minor injuries from their struggle. Neither, though, required medical care. Once they were free, you would think they would just run off, right? Like, get away from me, people. They didn't. They were so exhausted. They just sat there. One of them didn't even bother to get up. So once they're cut free, they're just still laying on the ground. Totally not the type of behavior you would expect to see. After a couple of minutes, the smaller one gets up, runs off. Eventually, the larger one did as well. They kind of poked it with the branch a little bit, tried to, you know, get it to move. And finally, it got up and made its way back into the woods. But scary situation there. A lot of these stories today are about people helping animals, which I really like. Although this guy probably wouldn't have gotten stuck if somebody had been paying attention to what's been laying around, knowing that their animal was a little squirrely, right? Here's this dog. This guy was taken to the vet because he got his head stuck in a trash can lid. And this happened in England. The animal, a 6-month-old Jack Russell Terrier named Amari, put the head right through the trash can and got it stuck there. So the dog ends up at the vet's office, and the vet's like, I can't get this thing off either. And the dog is struggling, and it's just a mess. So they sedate the animal, and they call the firefighters. So the fire crews have to go to the vet's office to remove this metal trash can lid. You think this is going to be an expensive vet bill? I'm going to say yes. So Amari's owner said they went to the vet. The firefighters get called in. They made a plan to cut through the lid after the vet sedated Amari to keep her calm. They said they were able to keep her under sedation while crews worked to free her with metal cutters. And eventually they get it off. She's not injured, but she has learned her lesson. Apparently the owner says, I certainly won't leave any more bins in the garden. I just want other owners to be aware that this type of thing can happen. I mean, you have to know your dog. I'm telling you, if you have kids, you know, anything's possible. Always looking around. It's like this risk analysis. What could go wrong in this room, right? Here's another story about people coming to the rescue. I'm telling you, I found a lot of them today. This time, it's the rescue of a bull that got stuck in a muddy river. This also happened in England. A lot of English rescue stories today. Firefighters, look at them there. I love a picture of cute firefighters. That's nice on a Wednesday. Firefighters in Britain coming to the rescue of a bull that wandered into this river and got stuck in the water. County Durham and Darlington Fire and Rescue Service crews responding to North Yorkshire, alongside North Yorkshire Fire and Rescue. And a Richmond Fire Appliance and Water Rescue, a lot of crews out there to get this done, to pull this bull from the River Tees near the Blackwell area of Darlington. A farmer was out there saying, I need some help. So the firefighters put a rope around the bull's neck. They were able to lead it to the edge of the water, but it couldn't climb out on its own. So they had to bring in the heavy equipment and call for backup to help hoist this animal out of the water, get it back on dry land. After a little bit of rest, that bull was up, and they say just as we were leaving the scene, everything was okay. So the river was flooded. The currents were swift. The riverbanks were deeply muddy. It was quite a challenging job for all the firefighters on the scene and a struggle for this bull as well. So they managed to rescue it. I'm telling you, some days I love people. Not all days, but most days. This story that I'm following, and thank you for sending it in, about this stranded orca calf. We talked about it a couple of days ago. I think it was Dee that sent this story in. The story is this. This two-year-old orca calf named, they call it Brave Little Hunter. Brave Little Hunter was with its pregnant mother, and its pregnant mother got stranded in a shallow area, and they couldn't move her, and she died, leaving Brave Little Hunter by herself. There's a sandbar in this lagoon where she is, and for whatever reason, she can't get out. And efforts to drive her out into the ocean have been unsuccessful, and that's banging on pots, making all kinds of noises, trying to physically guide her in the right direction. None of these things have worked. And so the plan is now, as we mentioned a couple of days ago, to hoist her up with using heavy equipment, carry her to the ocean where there's a salmon area that they have an open ocean. They have a pen in the ocean where they farm salmon, and they want to put her in this ocean pen until her pod, the orcas that she belongs with, swim by so that then they'll release her so she can be back with her pod. That's the plan for Brave Little Hunter. And time is really of the essence. So now I'm following this story and waiting to see what happens. And the new word on this is they expect it to happen this week. The British Columbia First Nation at the center of this rescue is facing some pretty hard choices. So they say they're relying on their traditional knowledge about orca and the territorial waters here, along with modern tools to get this orca out of this tidal lagoon. She's been here for 2 weeks. I don't want to say she. I think it might be a male. I'm not sure. Brave Little Hunter. Brave Little Hunter has been here for 2 weeks. And they need to get this orca out of the lagoon to this possible open ocean reunion with its extended family members. The actual date hasn't been set. They've got equipment by the side of the lagoon. They've got nets. They've got all kinds of things that they're going to be using to do this. So they're amassing their equipment and they're getting ready, but they don't know exactly when they're going to do it. Likely this week. So the First Nation named this young orca Kiwasa, which translates to Brave Little Hunter. And I'm waiting and I'm watching along with so many other people to see when they do this. Will it be successful? And I'm really hopeful that this two-year-old orca, after all the things that humans have done to these creatures, putting them in SeaWorld, making them jump for us, right? Treating them as nothing but entertainment where people can make money off of them. I'm very hopeful that we can do right by at least one of these animals here. So I'm keeping my eye on this, and you can expect updates as anything changes on Brave Little Hunter. How about Myrtle the turtle? What a beautiful picture, first of all. Myrtle the turtle, she lives in a zoo. She's 95, which is nothing in turtle years. There are members of her species that have lived to 188 or more. She weighs 500 pounds, Myrtle. And she had her recent checkup at the New England Aquarium. This story comes from Popular Science. Myrtle is an ancient green sea turtle. She's at Boston's New England Aquarium, where she's lived for more than 50 years. And they gave her her checkup. Again, she's 95 years old. And they say she shows no signs of slowing down. She is in incredibly healthy condition. So these turtles can live from 25 years to 200 years. There was a tortoise named Jonathan. We talked about him on the show. Jonathan celebrated his 191st birthday and is currently the oldest known tortoise. But here we have Myrtle the turtle, and she's rocking it at 95. So they had to pull her out. They had to use put her in an underwater crate and hoist her, because she weighs so much, out of her home in the aquarium's giant ocean tank. So they pull her out, and then quickly the vets get to work. They draw blood, they check her flippers, they make sure her mouth, nose, and eyes are all doing well. They gave her an ultrasound, they put her on the scale, and then they quickly put her back in the tank. So when they take her out, they have to move pretty fast, because she's not going to tolerate a lot of this. Everybody, it was all done in the open, so everyone that was at the aquarium that day could see her being hoisted out, could see the check right by the side of the aquarium and everything that was being done. So it's kind of an interesting thing that they were doing. I do have, are you interested in seeing video of Myrtle? I'll try to show you video of Myrtle, because I just love watching her. What a picture. She's so cool. All right, I'm going to try to show you this video of Myrtle. You can kind of see what she goes through on a daily basis. Here it is. See if I can get Myrtle up and running. There she is. Yeah, you can see they kind of are checking her. This isn't when they've hoisted her out quite yet. This one is taken on World Turtle Day. Myrtle the turtle. And there she is in her habitat there at the aquarium. And they're giving her fish. What a beautiful creature. Love to just look at that. So, I can't believe they live so long. Incredible animals. I'm so glad that Myrtle is okay and that she's probably going to carry on for at least another 100 years. I wish her long life and continued good health. Oh, they're feeding her lettuce in there. Look at that. Very cool. Anyway, I wanted to share that with you guys. Just love looking at animals. Let us move on, though, to pets. Speaking of animals, there's a story today, and it is in, it was a Cron Forest story I saw, and it turns out that not very many landlords accept pets. People that rent probably know this, but I didn't know the numbers were so low. Only 21% of San Francisco's landlords allow renters to have pets. 21%. If that number were to increase, think of all the creatures they could get out of the shelters, which are overflowing right now. What a pretty kitchen that is. So there's a California Assembly member fighting for renters who want to live and find a place to live without giving up their beloved pets. This is from Assemblymember Matt Haney out of San Francisco, who said the majority of Californians who rent are pet owners, but the majority of rental homes don't allow pets. And he says 12 million people across the state of California are being denied access to pet house or to housing because they have a pet. That the majority of renters in the state are pet owners are being denied access to the majority of rental units. He said it makes no sense at all. And it's exacerbating the housing crisis. So he's authored this bill. It's AB 2216. And it's headed to the assembly floor after it already passed out of the State Assembly Judiciary Committee this week. And it would require landlords to have reasonable reasons for not allowing a pet in a rental unit. And only allow landlords to ask about animal ownership after a tenant's application has been approved. No mention of pets. So if you're approved and then your tenant says, you know, I've got a pet, or you approve someone and then I guess you would have to tell the person, listen, we can't have any animals in this unit because we have someone that's deathly allergic to dander that lives in the unit next door, whatever it may be, whatever the reason would be, right? So you would have to have a really good reason as a landlord to say no. Assemblyman Haney lives in the Tenderloin in San Francisco. He's got two cats. He is one of only three renters in the state legislature. So he's not a homeowner. And he says California has the second highest number of tenants in the country. 17 million families and individuals rent. Close to 12 million or 70% of them are pet owners. Under current law, the way it stands now, only 30% of available rentals in any given city are pet friendly. And again, in San Francisco, that's 21%, right? It's a very lopsided situation. So if you have to choose between getting approved for a home or keeping your cat or dog, a lot of pet owners tend to keep their animals under the radar. They're not supposed to have them, so they have to then, you know, walk their dogs at night or whatever it is to try to make sure that no one finds out that they have an animal in the residence. The lack of pet-friendly housing, according to Assemblyman Haney, is causing more than 829,000 tenants to have pets in their units without the knowledge of their landlord. Do it on the down low. And unfortunately, if they don't lie about it, some people have to surrender their animals to shelters. There was a survey done where they looked at California animal shelters who revealed that out of nearly 68,000 pets that were surrendered, the leading cause was lack of access to pet-friendly housing. So, the Humane Society of the United States sponsoring this bill in California, and the Humane Society director here in California says, household pets are an integral part of our families. Housing is a fundamental right that shouldn't be limited because tenants are forced to choose between keeping their pet or putting a roof over their head. Like it or not, said Assemblyman Haney, humans have pets, they always have, and they always will, so we have to deal with it. I'm really torn on this because on the one hand, yes. On the other, what if you just socked a bunch of money into getting your rental refurbished, new carpets, new floors, new hardwood, right? And you get somebody in there with an animal and then the animal pees on everything or damages things. There has to be a way around it. You know, maybe extra monthly fee set into an account just in case there's pet damage at the end of the rental. I don't know. All right. So we're still in the animal rain. Here we go. One more. Look at that guy. He's a big-eyed worm. And he's interesting. This story out of Popular Science. And I love these really interesting animals. This tiny worm with enormous eyes could have a secret language. This is wild. This is a Vanadis bristleworm. Vanadis bristleworm. The eyes of this creature can potentially use ultraviolet light to communicate, find mates and or food. The worms could be among the only bioluminescent animals that use UV light to grow. All these findings in a study published this month in the current Biology. So the Vanadis bristleworms in this study are found around the island of Ponza in the Mediterranean Sea west of Naples, Italy. It's a member of a family of big-eyed bristleworms called Polychaeta. They're 6 inches long. Mostly they eat plankton, algae, little organic matter from dead organisms. The eyes on this worm weigh 20 times as much as the rest of its head, and they look like two giant red orbs strapped onto his body. The scientists say if human eyes were proportionally as large, we would need to carry around about 220 extra pounds just for eyeballs. These worms are nocturnal, and they disappear when the sun is out. Nocturnal, right? So scientists wondered what they do with their eyes and what they're used for. So a team of researchers from the University of Copenhagen in Denmark and Lund University in Sweden and Tuskegee University in Italy got together and examined three species of bristle worms that they collected by hand in shallow water, took them back to the lab, and they analyzed their eyes in close detail. And the team found the Vanadis' eyesight is better and more advanced than they knew before. Its eyes can see very small objects and track their movements, even though they have a really simple nervous system. The team is still working on this, trying to figure out how these worms evolved such sharp eyesight and why they need it. Their bodies are transparent, as you can kind of see there, except for their eyes that need to register light to work properly, which means they can't be inherently transparent. So their eyes becoming visible have to come with evolutionary trade-offs. And evolutionary benefits that maybe outweigh the consequences of their eyes being spotted. What they gain is partially unclear because they don't come out during the day when eyes typically work best. No one has ever seen this worm during the day. So they don't know where it hides. They can't rule out that its eyes are used during the day as well because they don't see it during the day. What they do know is that its most important activities, like finding food and mating, happen at night. So that, they think, is when the eyes are most important. Interesting. The research continues on the Vanadis bristle worm and why its eyes are so big. So interesting. All right. That's me and my weird story. But how about this? Talk about weird. What would you do if you were trying to smuggle $10 million worth of gold? Maybe make it look like something that no one would really be interested in? Like, say, oh, I don't know, machine parts. That's right, that's what they did. Hong Kong's customs detected a suspected case of large-scale gold smuggling involving air freight, and they seized about 146 kilograms of suspected gold with an estimated market value of about $84 million. This all went down at the Hong Kong International Airport. What you're seeing in the picture is the suspected smuggled gold molded and camouflaged as air compressor parts. It could have been the perfect crime, they say, had they used better spray paint. Yeah, 320 pounds worth of gold taken off this cargo freight search at the Hong Kong International Airport. The customs department makes this announcement. So the smuggled gold was headed from Hong Kong to Tokyo in March. Investigators only recovered about $10.7 million of the haul from within two actual air compressors. So they were smart. I mean, they put it in between other real equipment, right? But it's the Bureau's largest ever in terms of overall gold value. But again, they weren't gold bonds or bricks or stacks of doubloons. No, they were hunks of precious metal that had been melted down and molded into the shapes of air compressor parts and then camouflaged with silver-colored spray paint. It's a wild idea, but it just might work. No. Customs agents first noticed something a little awry after running the 1,708-pound pair of air compressors through an X-ray security last month. Standard screening process. They always do it. Similar air compressors are made from aluminum or iron, and they're usually intended for industrial and mining projects or to fill divers' gas cylinders, right? So they put them through, but in doing this, they had to remove the motor casing, and they found a rotor wrapped in a cord wheel, which was tied to tape. They said it was similar to a normal motor, but not quite. This warrants further examination. So they check a little more. Authorities find traces of glue at both ends of a machinery part. So using a hammer, they tap the part and they notice it's uneven, indicating the metal is far more malleable than it should have been. They scraped away at an outer layer of silver paint, and they saw flecks of gold. At that point, they say, the whole situation was pretty clear. They were dummy parts made of gold. They think the air compressor scheme was an attempt to evade Japan's precious metal tariff that would have cost smugglers about $1.07 million if they were to go through official channels here. So they think in order for them to have done this, that they melted the gold down, poured it into molds, shaped it to resemble motor rotors, screw shafts, and a gear piece. And they said that probably wasn't very easy because gold's melting point is 1,948 degrees Fahrenheit. Reminds me of that TV show Outer Banks, where the characters on the show took this incredibly valuable artifact that was, I mean, it doesn't matter that it was made of gold. Like, it was incredible. And they melted it down just for the value of it. Mm. So according to Hong Kong customs, police arrested the director of a local company April 3rd after finding his firm's name listed as the shipment's consigner. An initial investigation appears to show the company having no actual business dealings, potentially indicating it's a shell outlet for smuggling. They're still investigating this. The man has been released on bail. Under Hong Kong's import and export ordinance, anyone found guilty of smuggling cargo could receive a more than $255,000 fine alongside a maximum 7-year-long prison sentence. So they don't take kindly to the old gold smuggling in that part of the world. No. Can we talk for a moment about ADHD? Because I read this article and I thought it was interesting. And I, you know, a lot of people feel like this is a disability in some way. I feel like maybe it isn't always what we think it is. Researchers from the University of Pennsylvania released a study on the potential evolutionary benefits of ADHD. So they looked at 457 adults who played this online game related to foraging. The objective to collect as many berries as possible within an 8-minute time frame. Players can choose to keep collecting berries from the bushes in their original spot or move to a new patch. So if you move, you get a timeout. So that docks you part of your 8 minutes. And there's no guarantee if you move that the new patch has as many berries as the current spot. But the number of berries you could get from each bush went down each time you foraged it again. So if you've already picked at one bush for a while, you're not going to get as many. So they asked people to take this survey that were playing this game. You didn't have to have an official diagnosis, but the researchers asked people whether or not they had problems focusing. And then they looked at what happened with people playing the game. When they compared the survey results with gameplay stats, what they found is the people with ADHD symptoms, like not being able to focus or having trouble with that, played differently and more effectively than their peers. They were more likely to move on to another bush, and they collected an average of 602 berries compared with 521. So, is it a perfect model? No. There's no official diagnoses here. You know, there's a lot of ways you could poke holes in this study. But it's interesting, the indication here, even, that perhaps research can be done involving in-person foraging, maybe, where they'd take people with formal ADHD diagnoses as their experimental subject. It would be a little more complicated, but maybe they could do it. But it's definitely interesting, and it's not something that researchers haven't looked at in the past. There was a study done in 2008 where members of a nomadic group in Kenya who had gene mutations that were associated with ADHD were found to be in better health than average while those with the same mutations were associated with malnourishment in closely related areas where people lived as farmers, the areas where they had to forage, they were much, much healthier. So it's interesting. There was another study, and this one from 1998, so a while back, that found adults with self-reported ADHD, so again, no formal diagnosis here, were much better able to postpone eating, sleeping, and other personal needs to absorb themselves in an urgent task, like a last-minute deadline. Maybe that's why I'm so good at working on a deadline. It's a mindset, they say, that would come in handy for unpredictable food acquisition, like the sudden appearance of a herd of mammoths, unexpected bounty of berries. Some people are good at jumping in at the last minute and making things happen. So, interesting, this new study or new look at ADHD, that maybe it's not always a bad thing. There are times where it can play to your benefit, right? We'll move now to landfills. Kind of a bummer of a story, actually. I don't mean to bring you all down, but I know it's, we were supposed to have Belinda on today, and we're going to tape record with her a little later on and make sure that all the information she has gets on the Mark Thompson Show in the coming days. But I did want to tell you this story about landfills and how the new information shows they're a little more damaging, really, than we had thought, releasing more methane than we had ever realized before. So, this story out of Popular Science magazine says landfills are baking the planet more than we ever realized. Aerial monitoring finds they emit methane at levels at least 40% higher than previously reported to the EPA. I mean, what does that mean? Can we get rid of landfills? No. Can we reduce what we send to landfills? For sure. Yeah. The climate data investigators at a group called Carbon Mapper have published a study in Science. It's the journal's called Study in Science, that shows American landfills emit methane at least 40% higher than previously reported to the Environmental Protection Agency. At more than half of the hundreds of garbage dumps surveyed, in the largest assessment yet of this type of emission, most of the pollution flowed from leaks, creating concentrated plumes. The researchers found these super emitting points can persist for months or even years, and they account for almost 90% of all measured methane from landfills. So, how do they get ahead of it? It could be really hard to try to fix these hot spots. But it also shows that we have a lot of trouble when it comes to monitoring protocols and all of these things evading detection. So half of the ways that we're polluting, we don't even realize we're polluting. It's not even being measured. They said it's very hard to problem to get totally right without any leaks at any place. This is an atmospheric chemist and a project scientist for Carbon Mapper. His name is Daniel Cusworth. He says other times he'll see a massive billowing plume that's 3 kilometers long, and sometimes you don't see it. So methane, of course, is a gas created by decaying trash, among other things, and it often seeps through the soil and plastic covers meant to keep it contained. Federal regulations require large facility use gas capture systems. Landfills, though, remain the third largest source of these emissions in the United States, accounting for 14% of the national total. Because methane is 84 times more powerful than carbon dioxide during its first 20 years in the atmosphere, scientists say cutting the amount of it floating around up there is the quickest way to curb global warming. It also, by the way, benefits communities, because a lot of landfills happen to be situated, of course, near marginalized neighborhoods, where gas exposure impacts health or poses a risk of an explosion, even. So, on multiple levels, it behooves us to get this whole thing situated, right? Better taken care of. Did you hear about this lady? I'm so proud of her. Probably because I could never do this. This 59-year-old woman has broken the record for planking, the world planking record. I don't think I have a picture of her. World planking record. She's, again, 59 years old. Hi. And she's, here she is, and she is awesome. I'm telling you. I mean, I guess I look at people like this and go, man, I just could never. So to see someone do this, and I think also someone who's a little older, it's, I don't know, inspiring, I guess you could say. So here she is doing her, in her planking pose. You can see her. There she is. Sorry, it's a little fuzzy of a picture, but that's all right. She's 59. She's from Alberta. And she broke a Guinness World Record by holding this plank position. Forget this. 4 hours, 30 minutes, 11 seconds. Could you stay like that for 4 hours, 30 minutes, and 11 seconds? No. Her name is Donna Jean. Donna Jean Wild holds this position 10 minutes longer than the previous record holder, who was a resident from Montreal. She said it feels like a dream. Her love of planking started right after she broke her wrist about 10 years ago. So she was unable to do a lot of the exercises that she normally did. The family, she said, was doing planking challenges of a couple minutes. She said she tried it with her cast and she could actually do it. So it was the one thing she did for the next 6 weeks or 8 weeks with the cast on. She's a mother of five and a grandmother of 12. And she successfully broke the record at a school in McGrath. God, a grandmother of 12 at the age of 59? Holy moly. Wow. Boy, am I behind the times. Her students joined her for part of this attempt. And she said, whatever it is that you like, if it's sports or academics or music or arts or whatever it is, the more you practice, the better you get, the easier it becomes. And then, she said, you can help others around you. So Donna Jean, 59 years old, taking the new Guinness Book of World Records planking championship. And she smiles her way through it. Crazy. 4.5 hours on that one. Let's go to this interesting find. This is, I don't know, kind of cool in a way. Landscapers came across these suspected Civil War cannonballs in a yard in Virginia. Guess you knew what happened in your neck of the woods. Landscapers were working in this backyard and they made a surprising discovery. A suspected cannonball dating from the Civil War. Initially, when they pulled it out of the ground, they thought it was a strange rock or something. But no, they rinsed it off and they saw that it was a metal ball. And as soon as they saw that, they thought, oh God, it's a cannonball. And recently, at a nearby home, the same thing happened, right? Another discovery of a cannonball. This area must have been the scene of some type of battle. Or maybe it was where they made the cannonballs. I don't know. There's a real estate agent involved in all this who said, I recently dealt with it at another home, so I knew just what to do. I had something similar happen, and so I was kind of a bit more familiar with what to do and was glad to have the experience. So they call out the fire and rescue crews to this house, and they cart the suspected explosive away. They said, we assumed it was a Civil War era cannonball because it can be very unstable. So they treated it as a live ordnance, according to the fire department. And hauled it away and got rid of it, I guess. Yeah. What a discovery to make in your front yard or backyard or what have you. I want to let you know about this story. Disney is coming up with all kinds of new rules for the disabled. So they're going to now, I guess, not have them wait in line. People that are disabled, they'll be able to text families to say, it's your time to come to pick a ride. Small world, right? It's open and ready for you now. And that goes for people in wheelchairs, physical disabilities, as well as people with autism, maybe some developmental disabilities who are unable to stand in the line. However, Disney would also like you to know, don't lie to them and say you're disabled if you are not. Some people do it, which it seems distasteful to me, but some people will do it to skirt the lines. Disneyland guests who lie during the registration process for the park's updated Disability Access Service program will be permanently banned from the happiest place on Earth and its sister park in Orlando. That's the word. Lie to Disney, banned for life. Both parks are unveiling changes to their disability programs, which aim to curb the misuse in this widely used program. It results in longer attraction lines and backed up Genie Plus lane lines for guests as well. So the new rules go into effect in June at Disneyland and May at Disney World. Under the frequently asked questions section of the Disneyland website, officials are warning those thinking they can cheat the system. And here's what they say. If it is determined that any of the statements a guest made in the process of obtaining a DAS, disability assistance, something, are not true, the guest will be permanently barred from entering the Walt Disney World Resort and the Disneyland Resort, and any previously purchased annual passes, Magic Key passes, tickets, or other park products and services will be forfeited and not refunded. They're serious. Don't lie to Disney. If they catch you, you're out. And I mean out. You're banned, and you're out a bunch of money too. So they didn't say how people abusing the system would be caught, but they say it's very likely the cast members across the parks will be the first line of defense. They'll notice, like, what's going on. And I have heard of people who do this, who somehow say they're disabled or always go with a family member that's disabled because they hate waiting in lines. I don't know. So this program was designed to assist guests with difficulty tolerating the long lines because of this disability. The program is intended, they say, to accommodate only those guests who, due to a developmental disability like autism or similar, are unable to wait in these long lines like this. So you've all been warned. We have all been warned. Don't lie to Disney. The mouse will come and get you. Last story of the day. So I know I'm so sorry I'm keeping you guys too long. It's this lottery story of the day. I love a good lottery story of the day. And I'm starting to find them more often. So this story is about a woman from South Carolina. I call this one the Let It Ride. This lady from Midlands says she won $100 from a scratch-off ticket. And she took $20 of that $100, and she bought two more scratch-offs from the pantry store. What happened? She ends up winning her money back. She lets it ride again. She buys two more tickets with her $20. She said, I went out to my car to scratch them, and I was surprised. She runs back in to use the store's scanner. A clerk asks her how much she'd won, leading the woman to reply, you can't pay me. The ticket, a max money scratch-off, was worth $300,000. She says most of that she's going to save for retirement, which is smart. But can you imagine? You win $100, you take 20 of it. You buy a couple more tickets. You win your $20 back. You buy a couple more tickets. You win $300,000. I mean, I think a lot of people would be satisfied to go, all right, at least I won $100. That's great. Walk away for the day. Not her. She lets it ride, baby. Lets it all ride. I want to, speaking of contributions and people being kind and maybe giving me a little support along the way here on the After Party Live, I would like to thank Kathy for a contribution to the show today. Adidra as well, and Deborah, I just saw your PayPal contributions come in, and it's so, so appreciated as I try to keep this show rolling. So thank you so much for that. All right. I will see you tomorrow. Again, Nikki Medora's show is dark on Thursday and it's dark on Friday. And we'll be back on Monday with recorded topics of the day on the Nikki Medora show. And I know it's changing. I do hope you'll give us a shot, see if we can make it work in this format, because I'm really hoping that we can keep that rolling. And then I'll see you back on the Mark Thompson show, and that is at 11 a.m. Again, no Nikki Medora show tomorrow or Friday. But the After Party Live here, we'll keep it rolling right along. Again, thank you for being here. Oops, still have this picture up. Sorry. Thank you for being here. And thank you for all the ways you support the show. Now I get to go back in the chat and read all the fun things that you guys have been saying. And I'm sorry, I kick myself at the end because there are probably some really, really funny things that were said and I didn't get to put them up on the screen. Just know you make me chortle to myself here in the office. So thank you for that. Oh, Grady got caught smoking pot on my high school trip to Disney. Ooh, busted. No way. Donna writes, cannonballs don't explode. They are the damage, like hurling a big boulder. I didn't know they exploded either. I thought you just got hit by one. But perhaps there's some explosives inside? I'm not a cannonball expert. I don't know. All right, everybody. I'll see you tomorrow. Have a great rest of your afternoon. Bye-bye.
The After Party Live would like to thank the following contributors and viewers like you.